The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
This is Everything Elite, the world's best podcast devoted exclusively to All Elite Wrestling and the Elite Extended Universe. I'm AB, and I have once again decided not to take ZQL before the recording of the show. We'll see if that was the right decision. I am joined by my good friend, Nate, a.k.a. Epitasis. Nate, have you taken NyQuil?
I have not taken NyQuil. I did take NyQuil last night. So I had a pretty lethargic morning, which results in me having to take DayQuil a couple times during the day. I found out who my true friends were because I did have one person text me and say, I'm concerned that you said you take NyQuil all the time, but I only take NyQuil most of the time, so it's fine.
I take ZQuil literally every night to go to sleep.
Yeah, it doesn't sound great. Sounds a bit like a dependency. I don't know if you know this, but you are straight edge.
I do drink the alcohol-free ZQuil. And that's a shoot, brother.
As long as, you know, you don't have any sort of, outside dependencies on chemical concoctions, I think you're still unbroken. Did you say that? Is that a thing you say? You have not broken edge?
I have not broken the edge. If you're not now, you never were, all that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Also joined by resident aging indie rocker. It's Mike Spears. What's up, Mike?
This morning, Aaron said that I looked like the hold ready instead of the hold steady.
No, now, the get ready, because you're a prepper. That was the joke.
Of which I'm not a prepper. If you subscribe to the Patreon, you can hear my justification. I just don't like being inconvenienced. That's the short of it. Hey y'all, it's your old pal. I was looking like a prepper earlier. Now I'm just like looking like how I imagine. I'm blanking on his name, and that's really losing me cred right now. From Shellac and Big Black, Chicago punk rocker. Neither of you.
Nope. You said Schlack, man.
Yeah, you said Schlack from GCW and Big Black, I guess, from Robin Big.
No, yeah. Schlack and Big Black, the big Chicago rock acts of the 80s. Along with I'm done with this parallel here. The name's not gonna come to my head.
It was a valiant attempt. I've definitely never heard of them.
I mean, I would be stunned. I'm actually would be stunned, Nate, if you listened to Shellac. So, but yeah, I'm doing all right. This was a fun episode, and I'm looking forward to get into it. Unlike Aaron, I'm just having a cup of Yogi Throat Comfort Tea. So, unlike him, I'm not doping myself up for the show.
The true throat goat, Mike Spears.
No, we are not doing that. We are not doing that at all.
Yeah, I got to throw my support behind Mike here. That is a tough one to live with. So probably best to cut that off of the pass.
Fine. I was just, okay. Every time this is really for Nate. Every time I log into YouTube now, I have like 30 notifications from Blackpink.
Yeah, I was getting the notifications on my phone, which was pretty annoying, but I don't think anybody actually takes the time to like manage their notifications, even though that comes up. It's like, do you want to keep receiving notifications from YouTube? No, I don't, but I'm not going to hit the button to manage them. So yeah, I've gotten, 600 notifications about, oh, here's all the rebroadcasts you missed. Great.
By the way, Steve Albini was the reference I was making.
Steve, now I've heard of Steve Albini.
Yeah.
Probably as a producer, right?
Yeah. The producer and engineer at Electrical Audio. He's produced a lot of the seminal rock hits of the 90s and 2000s, most notably Nirvana's In Utero.
Sure. So. Okay. Yeah, I didn't know Schlack and Big Black. I'm pulling up a picture of him so I can put it next to your image here on the call. Sure.
That was the most. That was the most. I could tell Mike's having a rough day, so I'm just going to appease him right now.
Very
maybe
good
Bob
audio.
Mould. Maybe I feel a little bit like Bob Mould.
Oh, Bob Mould might work. I bought a Bob Mould album from Eugene Merman.
Really?
Yeah.
Let's get into this. Let's not talk about the Throco ever again, but let's get to Eugene Merman selling Nate a Bob Mould album.
Yeah. I was further south in Brooklyn than I would typically be. I don't even know that I can pull the name of the neighborhood to mind. But was, you know, walking through a nice Brooklyn neighborhood, and Eugene Merman was out like on his stoop doing like a stoop sale. And I did acknowledge the fact that I knew it was Eugene Merman, but I'm like, oh, it's Eugene Merman. I'm going to look at what he has. So I bought a Bob Mould album from him. And then I took it home, probably never listened to it, but I do have it in a box somewhere. I did also look at his Twitter timeline after that, just to be like, oh, I wonder if he tweeted about his snoop sale. And he was tweeting with the Passion Pit account. Passion Pit was like, this is like when Passion Pit was huge. And apparently Passion Pit had been there at almost the exact same time that I had. So for all I could have known, the lead singer of Passion Pit might have been shopping Eugene Merman's stoop sale right next to me, and I never would have known it.
Wow, what a story.
There you go. Bob Mould, former WCW writer. Do you think Damian Abraham still listens to the show?
I don't know. He was an original EE head. I don't know if he moved over to this iteration.
This rebrand.
You obviously had the word in your head because you started spelling it.
I almost said itineration.
Itineration. It's both an
I was thinking of like
itinerary?
Or like itinerant? Is that a word?
Yeah, I think that's a word.
I mean, itinerant.
That is a word. Traveling from place to place. That's a good word.
Oh, yeah. Somebody who does an itinerary?
It's taken us 2 weeks of us going immediately after Dynamite for us to go completely off the rails. So great work here, guys. I'm proud of us here.
Well, it's been a wild week because did I say this on the show that my wife broke her hand and so had to drive her to work, and so she goes to work earlier than I ever get up. So I've had to get up early. It's been miserable.
I don't know if we said that on the show. We definitely discussed it because you were being mean to your wife, and I took your wife's side, I believe.
That's usually what happens. Hope she hears this, bro.
Huge points with Aaron's wife.
Oh, okay. Let's talk about the show, I guess. We're on Twitter. Everything AEW.
If we must.
Twitter account. I'm at Aaron Like the Car. Nate's at Epitasis. Mike's at Fuji. Hey, subscribe to the podcast. Give us a 5-star rating and a review if you use the Apple Podcast app. And of course, the number one top dog, very best way to support the show is over at patreon.com/everythingelite, where I discovered yesterday we've already done 9 Patreon episodes this month. It's the 17th. We've done 9 episodes. Okay. Well, as usual, except not last week, we're going to start off with Elite. Or delete. Nate, what was your Elite pick? What was your favorite thing from this week's show?
Don't know if this was my favorite thing because it was a pretty strong show. Now that we're doing these right after the show, we don't get quite as much distance to think back on what we saw. And that's kind of, you can kind of use that time to say what actually stuck with me from this week's episode of Dynamite. But I'm going to go with, I think, what just got me the most hyped. And that was the main event of the program, the 6-man tag. It was a little wild, a little, I don't know about sloppy is probably not the right word to use, but a little freewheeling. And they've really carved out this great spot in wrestling right now with these six-man tag matches that they do in this promotion. And especially because they have guys like Rey Fénix on the roster who are just like, I'm just going to go fucking make this match all super exciting all by myself. And then he does it. And you just got a ton of great action, big spots, lots of sort of character interplay with, you know, the focus coming back to Moxley and Eddie Kingston in the final, in the final moments of the match. And it was just very exciting. I especially liked Rey Fénix cutting people off with just kicks out of nowhere. It'd be like, oh, this guy's going to run across the ring. No, actually, Rey Fénix is there having materialized in the middle of the ring, and he's going to kick you in the crown of the head while doing like a one-armed handstand or something. He's the best. These matches rock. I can't believe like how what like a joyous inclusion in this wrestling promotion Butcher and the Blade are. Like, they've just been part of so many fun matches, and I'm just like, yeah, I don't know, there's so few people, I don't know if there's anybody that really like their segment comes up on TV and I go, oh, I don't need to see this guy. And I think it's probably a testament to where AEW is at right now.
It was such a fun main event, and I think that's the big takeaway from the show in general, is that they had six matches on the show, and your mileage might vary on some of the others, but you had at least three matches that were very good to great. I had two matches on the show that were quote-unquote notebook worthy, and a lot of that was because the main event was just like this fun freewheeling brawl that, you know, plays into everyone's strengths. And the idea of Moxley, Archer, and Fénix, like in the past, like when they did a beach break, these guys should not all be on the same page, but they finally kind of get it all together towards the end into this awesome conclusion. And then, you know how I feel about hot tags, Nate. Fénix's hot tag on this show was one of the, I don't know if I think it's as much as gleeful as Matt Cardona's hot tag, but it was just truly exceptional. He is probably my most outstanding wrestler of the year. It's either him, Jason Lee, or May Saruga at this point. And just truly exceptional match. And then finished the show with a like molten hot angle. And they, for as much as I used to go, like, we're 5 weeks from this pay-per-view, we're 3 weeks from this pay-per-view, we virtually know the majority of the card now coming out of the show. And it's hard to walk away from a show this far out and you're building up to be a huge pay-per-view and not be enthused with what they put out there.
Yes, I agree with that. Should we just go ahead and go into the post-match now, since we talked about the big main event? I mean,
hey, I'm crazy. I say we do it.
Wow.
Yeah, let's do this. It ties in together. Like, it
makes
sense.
Strap yourselves in, listeners.
It does. So Kenny comes out after the main event,
looking insane.
Looking insane.
Incredible boots. Tremendous. Boots were, I don't know, looked expensive and were very fly.
I'll get back to the boots.
And the shirt that was straight out of a Ren Faire. Just,
yes, it was incredible.
I want to shout out the boots again before Aaron starts to talk. Boots were amazing.
I'll get back to the boots. Anybody else? Boots?
No, go. Yep. What are you waiting for? Come on.
Right. Yeah.
The Good Brothers attacked Moxley. Kenny Omega came out. He says, hey, there's a rematch clause snuck into his contract, but he's going to name the stip, and he names Exploding Barbed Wire Deathmatch as the stip. Jim Ross's immediate comment after the stipulation is announced, those boots that Omega is wearing look like women's.
Oh, I thought he said weapons. I think he said weapons.
Oh, did he?
Yeah.
I couldn't tell one way or another. At that point, I was too busy seeing if I can get Tom Nakano in the country to be in John Moxley's corner.
I thought for sure he said they looked like women.
I think he said weapons. I think he said it while he was doing the V-triggers, I think.
Okay, sorry. Sorry, JR.
So, I'm glad that I shouted out the boots earlier, because your shout-out was lacking. I'm going to do my delete right now.
Okay.
Because
Why not? Can we just talk about the Exploding Barbed Wire Death Match first?
Fine.
They're doing an Exploding Barbed Wire Death Match.
And it's going to be sick.
Yeah, very cool. Very great escalation of this feud, which started with a lights out match. And yeah. Kenny cut this like good promo at hyperspeed because he wanted to get it all in before the show ended. So he came out and hit like 30 points in like 90 seconds. So that was pretty impressive. My delete is, why did we have to set this up with a rematch clause in the contract? Yeah, extremely fun. Lazy. Tony Khan went on TNA and is just really feeling himself, cutting, you know, these big grandstanding heel promos on TNA and also on the Wrestle Fetish podcast. And promised
Tony, we talk about fetishes all the time on this podcast. No reason you can't join.
Do I need to open the horny door on my side to get Tony on here? Because if that's what it takes, I'm willing to do it.
If you open the horny door, we're going to have to call you the throat goat.
Never mind. Tony Khan will never be on Everything Elite.
So they have, so they do, you know, rematch clauses in general are WWE shit, lazy WWE shit. And Tony set this up by promising a big surprise for Kenny Omega on this show on TNA Impact. So classic TK overpromise. He just gets so fucking excited about his booking. He's very high on his own booking, and he just can't help but overpromise on it. And you didn't need to do it. You could just say, hey, by the way, I'm the booker. I'm the general manager of this promotion. I'm the owner. I'm the founder, whatever. You fucking cheated in the title match against our champion. You had outside help. You hit the guy with a fucking microphone. You have to wrestle him again, motherfucker. That makes all the sense in the world. You don't have to go, oh, I love contract angles. John Moxley gets an automatic rematch, but the opponent gets to choose the stipulation. Very goofy. So thank God Don Callis is here to set things right and give us a exploding match to justify this stupid contract nonsense.
A lot of contract angles on this show.
Yeah, I mean, as not a legal professional, I was kind of a little bit in the weeds with all of this. But yeah, like there was enough justification, I felt like, with the finish of the match that you didn't have to say, oh, there was a clause in the contract. You're being too cute by half there.
Like, yeah, also you're like, I don't know, some amount of weeks removed from 6 weeks removed from it, 8 weeks. And just now it's like, hey, by the way, it's rematch clause. Like, just seemed like a lazy shortcut to go, we need to set up a new challenger for the next pay-per-view. We're just now going to mention that he's got a rematch clause from the match that happened 6 weeks ago. Just like have Tony Khan go on TNA and be like, hey, fucking Don Callis, you showed up in my promotion. And you screwed me over and screwed our company over with your guy, Kenny Omega. So Kenny Omega has to wrestle John Moxley again, because that's what's up. Because John Moxley's our guy. He's our ace. And it's simpler. It's cleaner. And it lets Tony promo on TNA.
And Mox is the kind of guy that his character, it wouldn't make sense for him to turn down a stipulation. So if Omega was like, well, fine, but we're doing this, then Moxley would be like, okay, great. And it's his shit anyway, right?
Yeah.
Like this kind of death match. So. Anyway, I think it's cool because a friend texted me right after this and was like, you know, what the fuck? This sounds like a dumb stipulation. I'm like, no, this is cool. if you don't watch a lot of, you know, Japanese death matches, maybe you haven't seen much of it, but it rocks. And I mean, I worry a little bit because like the barbed wire on the bat was so shitty, like the first time that they did it, but it's on pay-per-view. I'm hopeful that they're going to make this really disgusting.
Hey, I mean, it all is going to come down to how good does the explosion look.
Right, yeah.
Yes.
And it's something that they don't have to worry about the Maryland State Athletic Commission, so they don't have to, like, gimmick things up if they really want to. John Moxley has dealt with his fair share of barbed wire in his life. Like, don't gimmick it at this point. You're in Florida. You're in Jacksonville. It's a lawless state. Just go ahead and just do the biggest damn explosion possible. Get all the permits that if you need a permit in Duval County and use real barbed wire. Come on.
Okay, I have a new idea also. So we saw a gender reveal on this show. First ever.
Wait, what are you doing now?
First ever gender reveal on pro wrestling television.
Nate just going into business for himself here.
Yeah, what do you want? John and Renee need to one-up Cody and have the explosion for the barbed wire match reveal the gender of their child. So okay. If the explosion is blue, then
sure.
And it's a boy. Or, you know, it's biologically, you know. The woke way of saying this.
and if it's,
there's no woke way to do it, I think. It's just funny to the idea of a barbed wire exploding.
The alarms go off, and then suddenly Renee Paquette makes her first ever appearance on AEW TV, and we like see her in the corner. It's like 5, 4, 3, 2, one, and then whatever color it is that.
Yeah.
There we go.
Danny also makes a great point in the YouTube chat of another big part of the match is how the ref sells the explosion.
Yeah. That's
very important.
Yeah, like you're going to need someone that's going to... here's some lore here about those FNW ones. You all have probably seen who the person that was the referee for all the exploding death matches in FNW in a different role.
I know this already. I won't guess because I know the answer.
Somebody told me this, but I don't remember what it is now.
Well, I'll give you a hint. Mike told you this.
Okay, because yes. I think after watching the Onita Hayabusa match, I asked if the referee was dead.
No. That referee is very much not dead.
He's still wrestling at an impossible level for his age. How about that?
Yeah, and considering what he did, I'll give you one more chance.
Is it Masaaki Mochizuki?
That's no. The other one. The other one in that same wheelhouse.
I just think Mike Spears, an old wrestler who's still good. I can only think of
Dragon Kid.
Mochizuki. Dragon Kid. That's right. You did tell me that.
Yeah. So,
I'm an asshole. I have a bad brain.
So they need to fly in Dragon Kid. They'll put him in the whole costume so he can explode. Like, that's the other thing. It's like they always would like suit up the people in FNW death matches so like they wouldn't get burned to like sell the explosion. So that's something they need to do as well with this. And the person that I think would probably do the best job of selling the explosion would probably be Bryce Remsburg. So I think you gotta get him in some like fire retardant like dungarees or something. I don't know.
Okay, we need to bring in someone who has experience with this. Yes, Dragon Kid does. Daichi. They should bring Daichi in. He's
Bryce Remsburg should have been wearing a toupee for his entire tenure in the company up until now. So if the explosion goes off, he can set it on fire.
Cinches his head.
And then he's bald from that point forward.
Yes.
Tony, you have to think of these things in advance. It's unacceptable that you haven't plotted this out. And you have Bryce Remsburg wearing a toupee for a year plus so that we can light it on fire during the explosion match. Come on.
That's
the real three-year story.
Should I say my elite now and some semblance of getting us back on some sort of rails?
Yeah, I'm done now.
Nate's going to go get some tea himself, I suppose.
So overall, like there was a lot of stuff that I was really amused by on the show, but nothing amused me more on the show than Kenny Omega reading the Young Bucks book to a bunch of daycare kids. Like, the matches were great. We'll talk about the matches. I know, Aaron, AB, you're going to have a match that you're probably going to talk about that I didn't want to steal your thunder here because I was just so completely charmed by the idea of Kenny Omega coming in, like, in a waistcoat in the title belt, leaving the title belt there. Like, we did not see the title belt for the rest of the night. That title belt might still be at that daycare. And reading the Young Bucks book and then... The everyone being really sad that Kenny left and they all beat up Michael Nakazawa just was a tremendous segment. Like, this is like exactly the kind of stuff that I feel like that they should do more of to tap into Kenny's complete just egomaniac character. And it was something that on a show again that I had two notebook matches on that I kind of came away and I've seen a lot of Young Bucks and Santana Ortiz matches that rock. I've seen this freewheeling trios match has kind of become their house specialty, but I'm walking away from the show just like gleefully cackling at Kenny Omega doing an appearance. The one thing that they should have done, they should have had Don Callis whisper into Kenny Omega's ear that he had to go, and then Kenny would have to make the George W. Bush face and walk away.
Would have had the book upside down to sell that joke. Now I really am confused. By the way, I want everybody to know Nate did actually leave. I mean, he disappeared.
I got water.
He's back. So I'm not sure, Mike, now if I should do my elite or just let you do your D-elite.
No, now we talk about Mike's elite. What do we always do?
Okay, you're right. See, you've thrown me off here.
It's very, very simple.
I've been put over recently as a great podcast host, so I'm losing my touch here, clearly.
These late hours are not... helping with your flexibility. So yeah, I like the segment, funny segment. Don Callis has like genuine comedic timing and chops where he can make a line read in a pro wrestling skit like funny. And you know, just him and Kenny's scumbag characters are very, very entertaining. It's a funny idea and cute to do. And it is like a funny sort of send up of, oh, you know, what does a world champion go and do in the community or whatever? Oh, you know, go and read to some children or whatever. But he's like obnoxious, so this is what he does. Everybody like knows this, but kind of unnecessary to go read to a bunch of children during a pandemic. I mean, what a, I guess I'm not really mad, because just as a society, we've decided not to care about anything. So what can you do? But it was funny. I did laugh. I think Callus's funny line read was like the kids had this line where they were supposed to say, "We hate Nakazawa." And Callus like says an aside to Kenny. He's like, "Oh, they said that they hate Nakazawa. That's not good," or something.
It just was, yeah. It is something that, like, in the context of the world we live in, it is wild that they did this and that they thought it would be a smart idea to go to a daycare to do this. But they just did,
They also did a skit at a daycare on BTE. So I wonder if they just had this hookup at a Florida daycare and they were decided they were going to make the most of it.
I've decided not to make a joke about them having a hookup at a Florida daycare. I flipped over because I got a text that Kentucky was up one and Vanderbilt was shooting free throws with 30 seconds left. So I was like, God damn it. They were winning by 10 at halftime or whatever. But they won. So it was okay. So I missed most of this. So I'm not going to comment on it, basically, is what I'm saying.
Got it.
All right, I guess I'll do my elite pick now. I'm just going to go chalk here. The ace is back. Riho's back. She showed back up. She reclaimed her rightful throne as the ace of the women's division just immediately. So if you haven't been watching Japanese wrestling for the, you know, Japanese women's wrestling for the past 11 months, you've missed Riho completely. But trust me, you haven't missed much because she hardly did anything in Japan.
Hey, so, she got lunch.
She got lunch many times. She hardly did anything wrestling-wise in Japan. And so I'm like, well, what are we getting out of Riho here? And, of course, she just had a fucking banger of a match. Really good. They got a lot of time to the point that people in the Discord were starting to wonder if it was going to go to a draw so they could set up an NWA women's title match for Revolution, which I think they can still do based on this result. But it was just good. Welcome back, Riho.
Welcome back, Riho, Queen. Yeah, really good match. I didn't love like every part of the match. Like the beginning was fine or whatever, but they had a bunch of big spots that I thought could be the finish and just totally had me bite on the near fall, with like really effective looking pin counters and shit and like people hitting their finish or whatever. Riho, you know, doing a big cross body and then Deeb rolling through. So totally hooked me by the end of it. And yeah, I think This strengthens my belief that Riho eventually loses to Britt. I guess the question is, do you want to do an NWA women's title match because she beat Deeb here, unless you're going to put the NWA women's title on Riho? Maybe that's fine. Maybe they just do that because the NWA not exactly running it on all cylinders at this point.
I mean, you could have finished that sentence at not really running.
Yeah. So I don't know, that'd be cool to see. It'd be, you know, that's a good reason to sort of give her a belt while also anointing Britt.
But they also already did like a 20 minute match or whatever. So,
well, like,
I mean, I'll see that match again.
Yeah. And here's the justification that you could say if Deeb wants to defend against Riho. She did not, like, Riho almost emptied her hole arsenal on her except for the running Samato, and you could say like, I kicked out of your diving foot stomp, I kicked out of your northern light suplex, you had to get me on a flash pin, I know I'm better than that and I want to face you, and I'll put my title online as incentive to base you, to face you. And I think it'd be a real interesting match coming out of that. I think that there's enough justification there to do a rematch there. It was a match that took a while to get going. It was something that like they like through the first commercial break where they decided to there's a whole lot of the ring Doc Samson on this episode.
Oh, yeah. Like, I'm glad that was in the commercial so I can pretend it didn't happen.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's like they completely stalled out entire commercial break with that. But as soon as they came back from commercial break, that was really awesome. Riho coming down hard on that double stomp onto D, that looked brutal. And, you know, I felt like that the way that she finished the match with the Gato clutch coming out of a bunch of pin attempts really kind of felt like that she got out by the skin of her teeth. And I feel like that was a enough reason for a rematch. They want to do that. And, you know, everything in this women's tournament so far has been a great amount of fun and shows you how badly they managed the women's division that time.
Yeah. The, That probably contributes to why I didn't love all the match, because of course on Fight TV I saw that whole Doc Samson stuff on there, so I was like, okay, whatever. Riho's pretending to like have a broken neck lying on the ground on the outside. This is whatever. But yeah, that double stomp I did want to shout out also, because I think she has the best double stomp in wrestling, because as they told us, I don't know, 24, 26 times, she is 98 pounds. So I think she just actually does a double stomp to them and lands her full body weight on their sternum. So it looks awesome. You know, compare that to the Prinks Devitt.
Finn Balor. I did not know where you were going.
The Prinks.
I haven't heard anybody say that out loud. So I was
no, certainly be the hottest thing in the business. His looks like dog shit. Kenta's looks like fine. But you know, you like saw on the table spot the other week. He's not really laying that in and putting his body weight into the guy, because that would really fucking hurt.
Wait, I've got a bit.
Okay. Oh, okay. Here we go. Here.
Oh, Aaron's bit of the week.
Da Prinksy.
That was actually good, Aaron. That was actually really good. I'm proud of you.
Thanks.
The very Tommy Voros twins reference.
What happened to those guys?
Still sweeping the nation.
Oh god.
That rolls. I have another delete. The babyface side of the crowd was chanting for Serena Deeb, and I don't understand why you would direct them to do that. Like, I guess both these women are baby faces, I think. So I guess that's like fine that it's a split crowd, but you know Riho's going over. You know Riho is making her return after a year out of the company. Like, the crowd should be behind Riho. And when you control the crowd, because they're your wrestlers, just be like, hey, Riho's the big baby face here. You want her to win. Because then when she wins, it's like everybody's happy. I don't know. That kind of a nitpick. But I was like, why are they chanting louder for D? That annoyed me.
Yeah, ride with the winners. That's what I would certainly do. The only weird thing about a potential rematch is Riho is going to have to lose a match before that match would happen.
Yeah, to Britt.
So that may, well, I don't know though, because do they just want to do Thunder Rosa versus Britt again?
Yeah.
No, Riho beats Thunder Rosa and then loses to Britt.
I know, but I'm saying Thunder Rosa and Britt have like a thing.
Oh yeah, I don't think they want to go right back to that now.
I mean, that's something you can keep it in the chamber. The other thing about the rematch, this title, probably the NWA World Women's title, probably means a lot more to Japan right now than it does in the United States. So the fact that she would have become that champion is like one of those things. I mean, when it was during the, I'm blanking on his name here, Sancho, the lawyer in the New Japan. Come on.
Bruce Tharpdes.
Bruce Tharpdes. Like, that was a big deal because like the NWA means something in Japan. So like, I feel like that there's a lot of justification there. Other good double stomps, because there are a few, and J-Pop mentioned in a live chat, so I want to make sure that this is on there.
Well, I saw the Loki. I don't think...
Loki? Oh, the Warrior's Way owns. I've seen him wreck people with that.
Yeah. I guess I'm a little skeptical that Loki's working.
Well, I mean, that is true. That is true.
And by working, I mean like having matches. I don't know. Is he in MLW, I guess?
Yeah, he's still in MLW right now.
Okay.
I do think that by far, I think that Riho has the best double stomp out of the Joshi, because most Joshi, you notice like they come down on their knees at like right afterwards. They're not doing full motion there. So there's a lot of ways to go with that I feel like would be pretty good there.
Just went to Loki's cage match, most recent match on MLW on January 13, 2021. Loki defeats Bud Heavy by referee's decision in 8 seconds.
Not as fast as Ricky Starks on Dark. Should I talk about my delete now, I guess?
I'm gonna need you to stick to one here, Mike.
I think I can.
Thanks, bud.
So I have to say that there's a lot that they've put together for this Revolution card tonight that I'm very enthusiastic about. We've talked about the exploding ring barbed wire death match, down for that. Young Bucks versus Jericho and MJF. That should be, I mean, the Young Bucks are exceptional. But I have to say, some of the lower card stuff just looks completely just like, okay, we have to get people on the show. Like this whole Face the Revolution ladder match, which, hey, they want to have a ladder match, and Cody's storyline is over at this point. And you have other people like Scorpio Sky and Pentagon Jr. who really aren't doing a whole lot in the company right now. So it's a good way to kind of go in there. But just there, it feels like that the business in the card now, especially with like how they heated up Team Taz versus Darby and Sting. And now that we know that's going to be Hikaru Shida versus the tournament winner, and all three of us predicted Britt Baker, like you have a very strong business in the card here. But what the other stuff that they're having to fill out this show that they announced tonight, not really enthused about, to be honest. But I'm getting exploding barbed wire match live for the first time in my life. Like, that's going to be insane. Like, very few people have watched exploding barbed wire death matches live, so that's a really rad thing to experience. But it's just this Face of the Revolution ladder match. It feels kind of like when they did that other ladder match at Double or Nothing 2, where it's just like, okay. And I just kind of wish they would kind of like find other ways to get people onto the shows.
Yeah, hotshotting ladder matches is NXT shit.
Yes, I put on the notes NXT ass ladder match was my or was a delete that I proposed. Yeah, it sucks. But you know, who can forget? We wouldn't have gotten the great moment of Tom Brady winning his 30th Super Bowl without him winning the ladder match to get there. So I'm pretty pleased that that's what they've decided to do. My delete, what's left on the board here? I guess I'm just going to say, yeah, the build for the Matt Hardy, Adam Page thing, that's dumb as shit.
I think I like it now.
Because I don't like it, I know. But
no, I think I've just turned the corner on Big Money Matt. Eddie amuses me.
Two contract angles on the show.
Yeah.
One of them about their first quarter earnings. That's the stipulation. That's dumb as shit. I mean, not to mention the fact, you know, in the middle of a pandemic, it's kind of weird. But I just hate it. I think it's dumb. I don't like watching Adam Page at this point. Don't have any interest in him. So I hate that because I like him a lot.
I like the first quarter earnings thing is like, I'm pretty split because it's like a very funny specific to me to be that specific about it. But it is also obviously very silly and dumb. Yeah, somebody loves contract angles.
And it's just like the way that it was like the one part of this angle that I liked was Dark Order coming out and they had like the nice little thing. Alan Angels got a chance to lay out Matt Hardy, and that was cool. And like the way that was kind of like building up there, and I like that part of it, but the rest of it, you're just like, okay, so we thought that it was going to be like, oh, Hangman pulled a trick here, but now we're doing a match for everyone's quarter one earnings. It's the money match. And you're just like, hey, at least they've built this up through all the vlogs, at least, but it's dumb as hell.
It was a good line from Hangman.
I think we got a money match.
Yeah, that was
that also works on two levels, because Matt Hardy's gimmick on BT was explaining inside terms, and he's like, oh, I'm Big Money Matt. Now I can do a trademark match called the money match. Get it? It's an inside term. So that's cute. Yeah, I think I just like the premise of all these people being suitors for Adam Page. And they put that over on commentary a lot. Like, oh, JR was obsessed with the pay window tonight. But he's like, yeah, everybody wants Adam Page because he's very talented and he'll win them a lot of money. Which is like, okay, whatever. But the Dark Order like coming out to make the save was pretty cute. Maybe we're still gonna get Page just joining that, and it'll all wrap up with a nice little bow. But yeah, you know, the contract thing. You're gonna have a limited tolerance for contract angles in wrestling.
Listener Elite, Kara, friend of the show, Kara. Her elite, the sizzle reel of Shaq making a free throw.
It was a three-pointer.
Oh, sorry. I took Carr at her word that it was a free throw.
Well, but still.
Jade Cargill. Somebody put Jade Cargill over on Twitter and was like, wow, training with Jade even has Shaq hitting free throws. And Jade said, oh, no. That was a three-pointer.
Oh, wow. Well, they tricked Kara also. But yeah, for our non-sports fans out there, if you know, it's hard to understand AEW sometimes if you don't watch sports. And I'll just let you know, Shaq wasn't good at shooting free throws as an NBA player.
There was an entire strategy devoted to how bad of a free throw shooter he was based. He was.
That's true.
The Dallas Mavericks pioneered the Hack-a-Shack, Donnie Nelson. But yeah, no, really interesting thing, and finally had some connective tissue in the storyline whatsoever. So we actually have Shaq and Jay Cargill together, which was much needed.
Yes, well, there's like a little, we can believe a little bit that they have any sort of relationship because, yeah, they did this one thing that needed to be done probably because up to this point has not existed.
She played like college hoops, right?
I think she was a basketball player. Definitely a college athlete.
Yes, Jacksonville University. So she's a Jacksonville native, or not a Jacksonville native, but very familiar with the city of Jacksonville.
What is Jacksonville's mascot? I used to know this. This used to be a game my dad and I played, was naming mascots of obscure schools to each other.
Well, their minor league baseball team is the Jumbo Shrimp,
of course, yeah. But Jacksonville University, because there's also Jackson State, which is coached by Deion Sanders now.
She's from Atlanta. It's a pretty Florida nickname or mascot.
Oh, the Jacksonville University. Yeah. Jacksonville University.
They are the Dolphins.
They are. I mean, I was waiting for you to guess, but you just looked it up, didn't you?
Yeah, dude. I'm not going to. We saw how the Dragon Kid lore went earlier today.
That's true. All right. Listener Delete, Chelsea says, it's been said, done to death, but the absolute failure to plan ahead and better showcase the women's tournament, which I agree, at least as far as it relates to throwing like two of your biggest stars in the women's division, one of your former champions on YouTube, very strange choice.
Yeah, you know, I complained about this on Twitter and had people coming, oh, they don't have enough time to do it before Revolution. Well, that's not my fault. That's their fault.
Yeah, who plans the fucking shows?
Yeah, so start doing this earlier and then you have plenty of fucking time. Or, I mean, I don't want to take time away from the really good women's match we had tonight, but you can fit two matches in on a show if you make all the matches shorter. All the matches are very long. Take 2 minutes off every match and you can do a whole nother match. Like,
it's something also like they did the promo package, which is what I was expecting just because of just technology and would Turner want to have the Japanese matches on TV. But it's very clear now how much this all came together very quickly between how some of the stuff that I know that Aaron, you picked up on with the Japanese side of the bracket, especially with Excalibur. It does seem like that Excalibur did a lot of good work on commentary, but you could kind of tell that Excalibur kind of did it by himself. So it's something that everything kind of feels kind of thrown together when, I mean, they knew they were going to do this. They had Riho back in the States several weeks, or she was planning on coming back in the States at least by the end of last year. I think was the first time there was any inkling that she was, because she wrapped up at Stardom and she, other than appearing at Chocopar, there was nothing else she was doing in Japan. So there was indication that she was coming back, but you could tell like how this was kind of done by the seat of their pants. And especially for someone like Tae Conti, who, if you watch Dark, Tae Conti has a legitimate argument to be the most improved wrestler of 2021. Like, she is legitimately turning into a great wrestler. And instead of showcasing that on Dynamite, you're putting it on YouTube, which, hey, that means that there, it's going to be an hour of solid matches there, so I'm not going to complain about that, but you should be having that on TV. And that's the part of the bracket where you can get put on TV versus empty arena and Ice Ribbon.
You can have all your nice production quality, and yeah, we're not talking about who to pick on. Your pig dreams, putting your Alex Garcias on Dynamite. We're talking about four women who should be pushed Television X in Nyla, Tae Conti, Anna Jay, and Britt Baker, who's like been the cornerstone of your division. Yeah, those should be pushed and advertised matches on television and, you know, been like, this is an attraction. You should pay attention to these women because they're going to be important going forward.
In the hobby, it's not easy being a fan of ripping packs or repacks. We hype ourselves up thinking, maybe I can pull a Ken Griffey Jr. rookie card. But with zero transparency on available cards and hit rates, it's all just a shot in the dark. Until now. Introducing Slab Packs from ArenaClub.com, the only repack that provides real value, a complete view of all possible cards, and clear hit rates for each 1. Now, when I buy slab packs at Arena Club, it finally feels like I know what I'm getting. I was able to open an Arena Club slab pack, and I'll be honest, it was a lot better than what you normally do. Say you go to a card show, and there's a random innocuous brown bag of cards, and yeah, you can open it, and look, it's going to be junk. You know what I mean? Like, you know what you're probably going to get in those. Maybe you find that fun, and sometimes I do. Sometimes I like just opening up cards and saying, ah, hey, look at some random cards or whatever. But if you're really in this game to find value and find particular cards, it sucks to have to buy these mystery packs, and it ends up being, you know, almost nothing, you know, nothing of value. Not with Arena Club. You get a display, again, of all available cards, hit rates, grading, so you know that when you're opening up the slab pack, you are going to get something valuable. You are getting something good. And Arena Club, in addition to having those great slab packs we just talked about, is also a marketplace for card collecting, buying, trading, selling, displaying, all that sort of stuff. But those Arena Club slab packs, man, they are revolutionizing the repack game with transparency. After your pulls are revealed, they'll immediately be placed in your vault for safekeeping or trading and selling, and you can have them officially graded by Arena Club as well. So again, sending these things off, it's going to be officially graded by Arena Club. And the Arena Club grading process is accurate, fast, and transparent, with full grade rationale provided and explanation of how your card was scored. So whether you're buying, selling, trading, or displaying, Arena Club is the card collecting platform that you have to check out. So right now, I've got a special offer here for Voices of Wrestling Network listeners. You can get 10% off of your first purchase by going to arenaclub.com/VOWnet. Again, that's arenaclub.com/VOWnet. Now, that's a crazy offer. That's 10% off a $400 slab pack. $40 off right there. 10% off your first purchase. No matter what that purchase is, 10% off. Off. Again, that's arenaclub.com/VOWnet, arenaclub.com/VOWnet for 10% off your first purchase on Arena Club. And we thank them for sponsoring the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. What's going on, guys? This is Rich from the Flagship Podcast here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. If I could have a moment of your time, I'd like to tell you about one of our sponsors, Eufy Video Lock. Eufy Video Lock is a smart lock, a 2K camera, and a doorbell, all 3-in-1, offering you triple security. So you can have everything in one device rather than installing many pieces on your front door. But it's not just for security. The Eufy Video Lock is also for convenience. No more concerns about losing keys, and you can assign passwords to your family members and see them coming back home via the integrated cameras. Some other great features we love about the Eufy Video Lock is it is easy to install and set up with just a Phillips screwdriver. No drilling required. Keyless entry. No more fumbling for keys when your hands are full. You never have to worry about kids losing keys or passing among renters. You also have 0.3 second fingerprint recognition and 1 second unlocking. Again, 0.3 seconds, it's going to recognize your fingerprints, and in 1 second, it's going to unlock. And with the AI self-learning chip embedded, the more you use it, the more accurate it will be. Also, no battery anxiety. You have a rechargeable battery in there that could last around 4 months, and you will get a low battery notification before it runs out. Passcode unlocking, a remote control with a 2K clear sight, see who's at your door, and control from anywhere through the Eufy app. With enhanced night vision, you can have optimized view even in the evening. You can also secure your package delivery by view and two-way audio. And then best of all, no monthly fee. A bunch of other brands out there are going to charge you a monthly fee. You have your recordings locally, and you never have to pay for storage. Customer service, Eufy's got you handled as well. They are on standby for you 24/7, so you can enjoy a worry-free experience with an 18-month warranty, all backed by their professional customer service team. Contact them anytime by telephone, email, or live chat. Personally, as a homeowner, I love my Eufy Video Lock. I have the ability to see what's going on when I'm not home, when packages has arrived, and really the thing I love the most about it, the ease of being able to lock and unlock my doors without having to fumble with my keys, reach in my pocket, or wait, no, crap, they're in my backpack, all that sort of stuff. All this is happening while my dogs are barking at me. You know what? Not anymore with the Eufy Video Lock. I touch it. 0.3 second fingerprint recognition, 1 second. Door is unlocked. Much, much easier. So if you want to jump on board with Eufy Video Lock, search Eufy Video Lock. That is E-U-F-Y Video Lock. Again, that's Eufy Video Lock, E-U @FYVideoLock or visit eufyofficial.com/videolock to see how you can gain complete control of your door.
Yeah, it sucks. Let's move on to the rest of the show. Of course, it kicked off with Matt Hardy and Hangman Page defeating TH2. Weird. Hardy pinned on Helico with a twist of fate. After the match, yeah, we got this angle where, okay. Jackson DeVille comes out with the contract. Hangman wants somebody from legal to bring the contract out. And so, of course, it's Jackson DeVille Esquire who comes out with
They breadcrumbed that a little bit because his Chiron said that Hangman Page had recently hired a shady legal team. So they set the stage for him having bad legal representation at the beginning of the match, I guess.
Even though he was able to like get this over on Matt Hardy?
Yeah. Okay.
Anyway, Matt Hardy looks at the contract, says, oh, this is actually a match or for a match between us and, you know, the first quarter earnings thing. But Jackson is actually Isaiah Cassidy. I'm not sure how Isaiah Cassidy got the contract. I'm imagining Adam Page going to a lawyer's office where Jackson DeVille is sitting behind a desk, but it's actually Isaiah Cassidy behind the desk.
How did Isaiah get the costume?
Well, it's easier for me to believe than how he got the contract. I mean, there's got to be Jackson DeVille costumes just sitting around the field.
So if we track the evidence, Matt Hardy said as soon as he countersigned the contract that Adam Page switched out, he sent it to the lawyer, which must mean Mega Parekh, the Jacksonville general counsel, AEW general counsel, presumably as lawyer. She is the one that's taking these match contracts and, you know, making a recording of them and putting them in their record system.
Like a deed book.
Yeah. And then I guess, you know, once you've made the record of it, the actual one is probably just sitting in a file cabinet somewhere. So Isaiah Cassidy went and took it from Mega Parekh's office, and then to conceal his identity, attacked Jackson DeVille and stole his outfit like Hitman. I think that's what must have happened. But why?
Yeah, what did Isaiah Cassidy gain by doing that?
I mean, Isaiah Cassidy the only thing that it must be that Isaiah Cassidy knew. So everyone watches the show. We know that everyone watches Dynamite.
Right. Except Matt Hardy, apparently.
Well, but Isaiah Cassidy must have known that he switched it, so he wanted to get his hands on it. That's the only thing that makes sense. Otherwise, why would he need a copy of the contract that Matt Hardy believed made Hangman Page's client?
Also, which Matt Hardy already had in his possession, but let it out of his possession. I mean, you'd think they could just go to Mega's office and say, hey, can we get a copy of that contract I sent you? Very weird. We spent obviously more time thinking about this than our good friend Tony Khan, our wrestle fetish friend Tony Khan. So that happened. Alex Marvez was with the Inner Circle. He pointed out that this is going to be Santana Ortiz's first tag title shot in AEW. I was surprised to hear that as someone who's watched every show that's happened.
They lose a lot.
Yeah, I guess so.
I was going to say they were doing that huge Bucks feud and never really got into the SEU part. So it makes sense.
That's true. They think it's because other teams are afraid of them. MJF, he's still mad at Sammy. So Sammy crossed the line because he claimed I was recording. Well, I wasn't. Now Sammy won't apologize. Jericho tells MJF to shut up because we all saw what you were trying to do. You kept goading Sammy and caused him to quit. But the majority of this is still Sammy's fault, and Sammy is now dead to me.
Yeah, they did a lot of work here trying to fix the goofy angle that I complained about a lot last week. And MJF saying, why would I record you when there's a camera in the room? I think, and they did like a pretty competent job of it, I think. You know, sort of just getting down to the brass tacks of who's mad at who and why. It's like, okay, Chris Jericho acknowledges that everyone has seen MJF being shady for weeks on end, but he's madder at Sammy Guevara for abandoning him or whatever. Okay, fine.
Riho defeated Serena Deeb with the Gato Clutch, which we talked about in the video of Jade Cargill. I'm glad this match happened, but here's something that didn't have to be on this show when we're talking about, why can't you fit two women's matches on the show? Orange Cassidy defeated Luther with the Orange Punch, and honestly, a match that I enjoyed a lot.
It was fun. It got reckless, and we got a really sick, awful waffle on Serpentico, and, you know, this was a match that did not need to be there, but did not overstay its welcome, and it got reckless and fun. And, I mean, you got Chuck and Orange Cassidy, but no Miro whatsoever about this, which is kind of weird.
Yeah, Danny asking in the chat why was Orange here on this show if they didn't progress the Miro story. I think this is fine that they put this here because they did this giant angle with Orange and Chuck and those people. And if just none of those guys are on the show at all, and you're kind of like, oh, what, you know, what happened there? There's no sort of continuity. I think if you're somebody who dipped in and saw that angle and saw Orange get the best of Kip and Miro, et cetera, then it kind of helps you to keep your focus as Orange Cassidy comes out on this show and we see those guys beat up a couple jobbers. I think that's productive. Mostly this was highlighted by the awesome looking awful waffle.
Also, I think it's possible. I mean, I don't know, but a lot of people it seemed got snowed out of being there, so I don't know if Miro just couldn't be there.
True.
Speaking of, we had a video recap of Darby Allin and Joey Janela from last week. I assume Darby couldn't be at the show for some reason.
He got dragged in a body bag behind a truck.
Oh, that's right. I forgot about that.
So that's kind of why Sting was pissed off.
Oh, yeah. Taz came out only with Brian Cage and Hook because Ricky and Will Hobbs could not make it. As he's been seeing on social media all week, the Sting's going to call out Team Taz. So he's come out to call out Sting. Sting comes out and Taz tells him he's made a mistake stepping in the ring, but he notices he's got the bat, says he'd be done without the bat. So Sting drops the bat and he goes right after Brian Cage, which great. That got a true laugh out of me. I really enjoyed that. Hook attacks Sting with the bat. Cage was able to, you know, get back in control and then delivered a pretty nasty powerbomb to a 60-year-old Sting.
Yeah, this was pretty fucking wild. Got a big reaction from me from the powerbomb, of course, because we all are sort of operating under the belief that Sting had, what was it, spinal stenosis and was not in a position where he could be taking a lot of bumps. But Brian Cage powerbombed the shit out of him. It was pretty awesome. And it was finally like a really good escalation of this feud that they've been dancing around for weeks on end. I don't know if they did, you know, they had to wait for Sting's spine to heal or something before they could get to this point. But it finally felt like, oh, now shit is serious with Brian Cage putting him in the mat. I do kind of wish they, like, I don't know, maybe commentary or somebody sold this a bit bigger. It's kind of a fine line. Like they obviously want to convey, hey, no, Sting's bumping. Sting is wrestling in this match, so you guys should tune the fuck in. But also, you do want to put a big exclamation mark on that. Like, holy shit, this is an old guy who had back problems. That's a big moment.
Yeah, they did a solid job here, you know, elevating the feud after it's basically been spinning its wheels for however long. And it's something where commentary really could have been like, wow, we thought Sting was not going to be wrestling anymore, even though he was going to be fighting, but he's been hurt, and we all saw what happened to him before, knowing that this is a company that is willing to acknowledge things happen to other promotions. Like, there's ways you could have done this, but it was very, I felt like that given what all has gone on with this storyline, like, this was the escalation needed now. So it was nice to see, and I think it's going to, now that we know that Sting will be getting physical at a level that we weren't expecting, I think that makes the street fight match a little bit more interesting. You know, it does feel like that's not just going to be something where it's going to be a lot of smoke and mirrors. Now we know, or we can assume, that Sting's going to be physically involved for a great portion of this match.
Yeah, I was kind of had it in my head that it would be like, oh, it's going to be like a boneyard match. Like, maybe Sting will be on a crash pad, you know, something to that effect. But, you know, now maybe it's something closer to a, like, the parking lot brawl where it's like, oh, this is pre-taped and, you know, cinematic to some degree maybe, but no, he's going to be like bumping for real out there.
If he can take that bump, he can probably take some bumps. So we will see what he does. Eddie and friends had a pre-tape. Eddie basically just does a great job here of laying out why he has issues with everybody on the other team. Classic wrestling, good promo. Eddie's very good. He's kind of like, he's this very interesting character to me in that he's kind of proven that he's not going to be like a AEW champion level character in, on the show. But he, and it's like, we know that he's delusional to think he's ever going to beat Mox, but he doesn't know that. And he just keeps, it doesn't feel like he's, you could do the same thing with other people and it would feel like they were just running in circles, you know, like standing in place. But with Eddie, he makes it interesting enough that you can still buy into why it's happening.
Yeah, he's just super compelling. And, you know, everything he says comes across as genuine. And like puts, always has done a great job of like putting the idea of uncomfortable truth in your head, where he's like, yeah, no, Moxley, I couldn't get rid of you with drinking or pills or women or whatever else, which is like, you know, close to the line, close to the edge. I don't know. But makes you believe what he's saying and use that to great effect to like drive your investment in the match later tonight.
Yeah, it's real shit. Yeah, then Kenny talked to some kids in a daycare. And then that led to the Young Bucks defeating Santana and Ortiz. Nick pinned Ortiz with an inside cradle. And after the match, the Inner Circle attacked the Bucks. Omega and the Good Brothers were watching on a screen backstage, but not intervening. Brandon Cutler tried to help, but got destroyed. The Good Brothers slowly come out. Inner Circle bails. Chris Jericho got in Papa Buck's face. And Papa Buck got physical, baby. Papa Buck gave him a little push.
Mama Buck, I thought, sold like her fear really well. She was like halfway to tears, clutching Papa Buck after all this. Also, a nice little touch. I thought like Brandon Cutler came out just to give, you know, just to feed one more person to the bad guys and just give him a big vicious bump. That was good.
I thought this was pretty effective. I thought that this match itself rocked. It owned. This was, I mean, Santana and Ortiz should be champions of this division soon. Like, this was something where I could have saw the title change happen. Then you'd have Inner Circle versus Inner Circle, and the Bucks can have Good Brothers at the pay-per-view. That would have made total sense. But I really enjoyed Jericho getting in a pop of the Bucks' face, and you really had, like, similar energies going off of that time. It was almost the Spider-Man pointing each other meme, and that was tremendous. I thought this was really effective.
Yeah, this was a really good match. It did get a little derailed because Matt Jackson was late to break up a pin, and I think the crowd could tell that, and they kind of turned on the Bucks as a result because Santana Ortiz were like, got basically a visual a pinfall on Nick Jackson, and you know, it just the crowd was like, boo, that should have been the finish. And then that kind of sinks your baby face when people are booing you and wanting the other team to win in that moment.
Jericho has to be like Papa Buck's, like, he's got to be a legend to Papa Buck, right? Of like, because Papa Buck wishes he were a rock star, obviously.
Papa Buck is a rock star, for sure.
I mean, he can't sell out Sturgis in a pandemic, baby.
You don't know that. He hasn't tried.
That's true.
He's got, I mean, play Warriors Cry. That'll get some bikers revving their engines.
Next, we have the Cody Brandy gender reveal, which is fake, of course. FTR defeated Mike and Matt Sydal. I said Mike first. I'm really bumping him up in the order here.
You're giving the yoga
to Mike after the big rig. After the match, the FTR, they were going to cut Mike's hair, but the lights went out. We get a video up on the screen of Luchasaurus's mask. The lights come back on. All of Jurassic Express is there. There's Luchasaurus in what is apparently a new mask, and they destroy FTR.
I appreciate the amount of respect that you put on to Mike Sydal's name. He is the Yoga Monster. And Cody being on commentary and saying like, oh yeah, I know these guys from Dragon Gate. And I'm like, Cody, you've maybe seen the Ring of Honor six man, but that's probably it.
I don't think he has.
I was giving him a little bit of leeway there, but no, he definitely does not. Just kind of wild the fact that, like, you know, Mike Sydal is a longtime Dragon Gate trainee. He did a bunch of tours. He spent a lot of time in the dojo in particular. So seeing him on TV was kind of wild. And You know, this was the kind of FTR match that I like a lot more than when they decided to cosplay as the Midnight Express. So I came away with this enjoying it, and you know, it's just kind of like a wild thing thinking about, oh yeah, Mike Sadel's on TV. That's cool.
I gotta agree with Cody. This just felt like Dragon Gate tag action to me.
Yeah. Mike Sadel also took an unfortunate slip on the same turnbuckle that Matt Sydal slipped on in his debut. I do hope that leads to a skit on BTE where Michael Nakazawa again has oiled up the turnbuckle. I mean, I'm pretty sure Mike Sydal has oils in his yoga kit that he comes out there with.
Sure.
So you've got it right there. Makes all the storyline sense in the world. Then you get Michael Nakazawa, his, I don't know, second match of the last 6 months. And you can give Mike Sydal another little tryout match here. Would be nice, I think.
Hey, Nate, did this remind you of Dragon Gate tag action?
Yeah, it did.
All right, cool. Glad I'm not alone in this. Me, you, and Cody, we all agree.
I shall be baited here. I shall.
I watched some tour of Dragon Gate that Mike Sydal was on. My brief foray into Dragon Gate watching. And I was like, oh, that guy does spots of the yoga mat. That's fucking wild.
Yeah, that was the disappointing thing. We did not have the yoga salt at all during this match. Like, I thought that if you have Mike Sydal here, he is the yoga monster. He should be doing the moonsault with the yoga mat, and we did not get that. A little disappointing.
He's saving it for the Nakazawa match, and then they're going to find common ground in their love for oils.
Yeah, there we go.
They're going to have a body oil-based tag team.
The Slippery Boys.
The Slippery Boys coming soon to a Daily's Place near you.
Mox had a pre-tape. You know, he's going at Eddie. Eddie still doesn't get it. And then he actually gave the hard sell on the February 26th episode of New Japan Strong. He did not mention New Japan Strong last time. Said he's going to beat Kenta. Then he's taken everyone else down and taken back the AEW World Championship. He reminds us that he's not done with Kenny Omega.
Do you think Rocky Romero sends emails to Tony Khan that are like, Tony, we didn't get quite the hard sell of the New Japan Strong match that we wanted. We kind of need to make good on our plug. Do you think Rocky has to write those emails?
Hell yeah. He's like, I sent you Kenta. I let you have Kenta on two shows. I need more of a sell here.
Yeah.
Then we had the main event. John Moxley got the win for his team with Archer and Fenix against Eddie, the Butcher and the Blade. He pinned Eddie with the paradigm shift, and then we had the post-match angle that we already talked about. Cool.
Yep. We did.
You know, that show's over, but you know what's not over? Actually, it is over. Game over.
What is happening? What? Are you okay?
Did the Z-Quil just kick in, buddy?
No, I haven't taken it. I was trying to... Oh, no. You know, you're damn right it's over. That's what I was going for.
Oh my God.
I thought you were making a Kenta reference with Game Over there, and you just weren't connecting the dots there. You're leaving it up here for Nate or I to follow through on the alley-oop, but that was not going to happen, and you were doing your own thing there, boss.
So that show's over, but you know what's not over? Game Over. But his point was that he was over. Damn right he's over.
Yeah, I tried to switch lanes there, and I failed. So, if you
any gaming thoughts on today's Nintendo Direct, Aaron? We heard Aaron Tabs earlier.
Oh yeah, Golf Story is going to be on Nintendo. That's what I heard. So that's cool.
That's pretty close.
Yeah,
that is a game.
Yeah, yeah. I would say that's a leaner in horseshoes. You know, that's pretty close.
Golf Story is going to be in the new Smash Brothers.
Actually, that would own, to be honest.
That's what I heard.
There is. They did announce a new fighter for Smash Brothers.
Oh.
You will not know them, so no. I don't even want to say them.
Yeah, okay, yeah. Blyleth is already in Smash Brothers, so you can keep your wall scroll up.
Thank God.
So you're right now, you are basically have had two horseshoes as leaners right now. So let's go for a third thing. What was said about Zelda on the Nintendo Direct AB?
This is important to know, of course, because this is a big Zelda promotion that we're watching.
Yeah,
Cody, as shit. Is Swirls the TIR wrestling guy?
Yeah.
Okay. As Swirls pointed out, Cody is for sure going to name his daughter Zelda. So you got to know this stuff about the Zelda series.
Well, the joke I was going to do is that they announced that Cody had named his kid Link. I don't know. I got nothing on Zelda.
So close. I was really, if you would have nailed another one, I would have been.
No, hold on. I've got it here. Link.
Okay.
They announced that Maki Ito is going to be in the new Zelda, where she defeats Link with a Q.
you know what? I'll allow it, Nate. Are we going to allow that there?
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah. Good.
It was that idol group Link was referenced recently enough on AEW programming by Excalibur. That'll play.
Yeah. Well, we'll allow it.
All right. Speaking of the Japanese bracket, head on over to our Patreon, patreon.com/everythingelite. It's the best way to support the show. We got three tiers. On Tuesday, I did a kind of instant. My power went out, so I watched it like an hour after it happened. But a vaguely instant reaction and review to the four matches that they put on YouTube. Actually, that must have been on Monday night, wasn't it? Because that happened on Monday.
It was the same night. I listened to it that night. So yeah, Monday night.
Yeah, did it on Monday. So I'll do that again next Monday, I'm sure. We also had Into the Codyverse episode where we looked at last weekend's Choco Pro doubleheader, which included various people who are involved on the Japanese side of the AEW bracket. But we also talked about Sammy Guevara's little run-in with, or non-run-in with Impact, and some other interpromotional things on that episode. So lots of good stuff there. Light, of course, we did this week, as always. Mike's going to talk about the Go Big show again on Friday. It's just a big week over at the Patreon. And of course, this show is available live on our Patreon if you join the $8 tier. So lots going on.
It was our longest Light ever. Unlike Dark, who were cowards and were only 66 minutes long, we almost broke that on a show that was originally supposed to be 30 minutes.
If I had known that Dark was only 66 minutes, I would have made the vlog recap another 7 minutes just so we could have a longer Light than Dark.
Well, it is turning. The sun is...
yep. Days are getting longer. Now you got it. You're almost there.
Well, we believe in you.
The world is turning.
I have these depositions on Friday, and it's like all I've been working on is getting ready for them. So brain's bad. Patreon.com/everythingelite. Support our podcast, please.
I was a little disappointed that we got a lot of reactions to your guys' foot chat and t-shirt chat on the Light. Nobody brought up my discussion of the canonical tweet that was talked about a lot recently with Prince William and Princess Kate to have a baby. So if you want to hear what that's about,
great
AEW Light show for you.
Did Rocky Romero ask you to do that? Hard sell?
Yeah. Now Rocky said, I've got this tweet that I find really funny and I want you to reference it.
Cool. Very cool. Nate, actually, I'm thinking about this now. You are a pretty good Photoshopper.
I used to be pretty good. I'm not actually now. Back like in college when I had a pirated copy of Photoshop and took graphic design courses, I was pretty competent and actually did like a lot of the advertisements for our on-campus concerts and shit. Now I don't. I have whatever this shitty open source free program is, paint.net, and that just is not as powerful or intuitive as the Photoshop. Because I think Photoshop, I don't even know if you can pirate it anymore because everything's a service now. So you have to pay a subscription, you know, year after year, and it's just ridiculous. I don't have the youthful energy necessary to pirate things anymore.
We're looking for a graphic designer to help us make Joshi shirts that look like hardcore shirts.
Oh, I thought you just wanted to talk about my Photoshop skills.
Yeah, well, I did. I mean, you made us a great Photoshop today. Of course, if you didn't know, Evolve's coming back, and we got a lot of questions about whether we were going to start covering Evolve again, and Nate answered those questions by way of Photoshop.
Yeah. I think people are going to want us to talk about that on the Patreon, maybe. Do you think? Or maybe want you and Aaron to?
We will almost certainly not be doing that, just to be clear. Can't imagine a world in which we would do that.
So now that that's brought up, I'm giving this like 6 months before Gabe does his usual thing of being bored with what he's doing and explodes on someone in a wrong way. I'm giving this 6 months. Do you think that's fair?
I don't know. It's lasted this long. I figured Gabe would be gone way before now, so I assume he'll be there forever now.
It's just very funny to me for them to use the highly touted Evolve brand, which no one especially remembers fondly except maybe Joe Lanza.
A lot of talk about IP in wrestling these days.
WWE is like, oh, we got to exploit that Evolve brand that we own to the fullest and use it to undergird our NXT property where we're supposed to be young and hip and cool. We really got to put a big Gabe Sapolsky sticker on that thing.
It's like nobody ever liked Evolve.
The branding, as you guys discussed a lot on the show, was usually the weakest aspect of Evolve. Yeah. It had no, you know, specific style. It had no ethos or, you know, mission like a Progress did. And it had the worst graphic design, while we're on that topic, of all time. and WWE was like, ooh, I got to get a piece of that.
I mean, I'm just going to be surprised that Gabe will have a product that actually will have up-to-date technology and broadcast cameras. Like, this is a first-time thing for him. Do you think they might actually loan him one of the 4K cameras that they probably have?
I'm more interested if Gabe sent an email to Triple H, who's like, Paul, can I get some room in the budget for a laser machine?
I just want to say this. Look, here's the AB promise. If a Gabe Sapolsky email about this show ends up in my hands, I will do a podcast on the Patreon about WWE Evolve.
Beautiful. It's... People, listeners out there that might have access to such emails, make this happen.
And I want to be, I think everybody should know, I will never out you as a source. So
it's been proven.
You will be safe.
I mean, is he just going to like hire everyone else who worked for Evolve as like the inverse? Like, is Maxwell Chicago going to show up on WWE Evolve if you get an email and you talk about an email in a manner? I mean, because he can't fire anyone, so he's going to hire people instead.
He can't. I just want to say, I mean, I will never reveal the source, even on my deathbed, but if people knew, it would be so fucking funny. Like,
I don't even know.
No, only Aaron and I know. No one knows.
I looked through the EE Pod Twitter DMs, and it was not in there. Yeah. There were DMs from Gabe in there.
Yes. My favorite Gabe DM was, like, after all this, he, like, totally stonewalled us, other than when we stopped doing the podcast, he sent us a big DM just reminding us again how much he hated us.
And then he went on the flagship to further that.
To do it publicly. But the best DM was when Dan Matha, I don't know.
Sure.
Whenever he did the Soy Boys promo and like AT buried it on the timeline, Gabe slid in to be like, he will not be working here anymore.
Okay. He doesn't need to. He's making a big in crypto anyway.
He is. Congrats to that man. Okay, here's what's coming up in, I almost said Evolve, in AEW over the next few weeks. On Monday, they'll do two of the first round matches on the U.S. side of the women's tournament, Nyla versus Ty and Britt versus Anna Jay. And then the two semifinals on the Japanese side, Emi Sakura versus Yuka Sakazaki and Lio Mizunami versus Aja Kong. So, I'll talk about those. I guess I talked about this on the Patreon, but the big thing we missed out on, guys, was that, all the people who had been in AEW before won.
Which was kind of my initial thought, and then I worked myself backwards into putting Maki Ito over Ryo Mizunami. But my initial thought was, Maki's going to win because then she's going to wrestle Aja. And then I was like, no, wait, Ryo has worked AEW before and probably has some kind of contract arrangement with AEW. And then I second-guessed myself.
It's just something, like, seeing how that all went. And y'all know my opinion of, like, general gatekeeping and all of that. I detest it. I try to actively do my best not to do that. But the reaction to the angry reaction about Maki losing afterwards from, I guess, people who... I'm trying to hold my tongue a little bit, but people who aren't clued in kind of surprise me.
Yeah, I'm always I'm always a little surprised to still encounter people who like get really invested in their favorites, like winning matches. I don't know. Because it's made up.
Are you subcasting me right now?
No. Because we had a discussion on a Stardom podcast where we talked about Momo's push and, you know, accepting what the company's vision for her is.
Sure.
But, you know, people who are like, oh, I don't know, to pick somebody else. No, I don't have another good example. So people who are like, oh, Maki Ito's my fave because she's funny on Twitter. So she should win every match that she's in. And then they get like mad when she loses. And it's like, that's
her character.
Not that's just not why I watch wrestling, to see my favorites win. Does not factor into it on any level.
I do like seeing my favorites win. I'm not going to lie. That is something I enjoy. But it doesn't ruin my day. Like when somebody I like loses a match. And there was also this other side that really annoys me, which is like Joshi fans who were like, oh, do these fucking plebs even know why this match
right.
is good?
Yeah.
It's like, shut the fuck up. I hate those people.
and that's partially why like I did my preface about gatekeeping, because I feel like that's utterly noxious things. But lucky for me, my favorite wrestler in the world retired in 2016 and moved to Orlando. So I have no emotional attachment to anything whatsoever anymore.
Yeah, I'm just happy that we're on the perfect level of fandom and everybody that's either more of a stan or more of a gatekeeper is wrong, and we're just on the perfect alignment exactly.
Absolutely. I'll talk about that show on the Patreon next week. And then next week's Dynamite, we're going to get Hangman Page versus Isaiah Cassidy, the U.S. bracket semifinal, so either Nyla or Ty versus either Britt or Anna Jay. Ricky Starks and Brian Cage versus the Varsity Blondes. Is this an episode of Dark here, folks? And here's another one: Jake Hager versus Brandon Cutler. What a lineup!
They set that up, so that's
they did
good follow through.
Yeah, there's some thought put into the show here. So they're only doing one of the U.S. bracket semifinals here. So I guess Riho versus Thunder Rosa is the one where I'm wondering where they're going to put it, I guess. Is that going to go on Dark, maybe?
No, presumably that'll be on YouTube, along with the finals of the Japanese side.
Right, yeah, they're probably not going to do a single match YouTube show, would be my guess.
Right, yeah.
This ain't Choco Pro, Mike.
I mean, how much would I have loved Balian Aki here?
It's almost Choco Pro.
It is.
Taylor told me, I hadn't heard this, but that Excalibur is going to be on the YouTube show next week. I'm sorry, fuck. Taz is going to be on the YouTube show next week.
Oh, didn't catch that at all.
I'm excited to hear Taz talk about Ryo Mizunami. I feel like Taz definitely likes the vibe that Aniki throws down.
I badly want Taz to meet Chie Koshikawa. That's really all I want in life at this point.
Some of those Joshi fans are going to get mad at Taz.
Oh,
undoubtedly.
So
undoubtedly.
For sure.
I'm for it.
Taz meets Chie is something that needs to happen now. And I did just imagining, like, after like initial pleasantries, Taz having to deal with Chie just makes me really happy. The most energetic person ever dealing with Taz. Like, that needs to happen.
It's going back to our point about like what we enjoy about wrestling or whatever. I guess it also says a lot that basically when they announced, I was kind of like whatever about Revolution, and then when they announced the main event stipulation, it's like, oh, I can't think of anything better than a match that involves a bat that will blow up when it like when it hits the other person. So perhaps I watch wrestling slightly differently,
yeah,
from a lot of the good people who listen to our show. So that's going to be Dynamite next week. I also just want to say that in 2 weeks they've announced FTR and Tully Blanchard versus Jurassic Express.
Hey, makes sense for the build. You know, those segments have all proceeded in a logical way. So I'll take it.
All right. Well, I think that's everything that we needed to cover this week. Make sure you follow us on Twitter at EverythingAEW. I'm at Aaron Like the Car. Nate's at Epitasis. Mike's at Fuji Heya. Subscribe to the podcast. Give us a 5-star rating and review. Subscribe to the Patreon. Go to patreon.com/everythingelite. Big month. We still got the Revolution look back. What do we call those? Rewind.
Retrospective?
Retrospective. Rewind is my thing.
That's your thing, Mike.
Yeah.
I was looking at you. That's why.
There we go. I mean, as I am putting out very big Steve Albini / Bob Mould energy tonight, making sure I get both those names right, just to, you know, just bookend our show. Yeah, exactly.
Beautiful. Good. So that's it for Mike, for Nate. I'm Aaron. We'll see you next week.
Mother's Day is almost here, and you can get her the most beautiful time-tested gift around. A watch she can wear every day for Movement. Whether mom's into classic dress watches, rare and refined ceramics, or tried-and-true bestsellers, Movement has something she'll love. And right now, you can save big on the best Mother's Day gift ever with up to 50% off site-wide during Movement's Mother's Day sale at MVMT.com. Again, that's up to 50% off at MVMT.com.